Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:45 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time, and today is July 5th. And we had a pretty positive day on the Nasdaq today. It was up 58 points on the future, and that's demonstrating at least short-term support in the region of the lower side of its range. That 5,600 level has offered support on at least three occasions now since the beginning of May, and it has not quite unwound all of the decline that we had on Monday, but it has at least steadied. It's been led higher by companies like Nvidia, which firmed by a few percent, and that is also showing at least some support in the region of this 140 area. That is also where it bounced from back at the beginning of June. And when we look back at the size of the reaction that we had back in December, then it was about a $20 pullback. And so far, this has been a little bit larger than that. We had that downside Q reversal, which was larger. It was about $30. But if we take 160 to 140, that's about a $20 pullback. So this is what we might consider in inverted commas a normal sized reaction so far. It is important, though, that it has not held all of the advance. What really would be required for the Nasdaq to demonstrate additional upside here is some additional steadying, that it needs to start stringing together a few days on the upside to break this short-term bias on the downside that's been there since for the last couple of weeks. And the leading decliner, I'm going to get to the leading decliner. One of the leading decliners today was Tesla. It has it pulled back by $23. That's quite a large downward dynamic. It was sustained all the way through the day. It follows through on the pullback that we had on Monday. People aren't especially impressed by the delivery schedule for the Model 3. We haven't yet seen it on the road. It's already the beginning of July. It's not going to be on the road until the end of July. And then what about the production schedule? They've been kind of silent on that. But then also you have Volvo, which has announced that they're not going to be making any new cars with purely internal combustion engines or diesel engines, diesel or petrol engines, after 2019. That, of course, means that they're not going to be introducing new models, but they'll still be producing old models. They've got a seven-year product cycle. But it represents competition for Tesla. And something that did occur to me when I was just looking back at the history of Tesla was this: that it broke out way back in 2013, shortly after Fisker went bust. That really opened up the market for subsidies for Tesla. They had basically been competing to become the dominant electric car force, and they succeeded in doing that when Fisker went bust. Fisker is about to, in a new iteration, release its own car, and they've made some very ambitious statements about what to expect in terms in also that they're saying that they've incorporated graphene into their battery and that their car is going to have a range in the order of about 500 miles. That's quite a substantial competition for Tesla, if in fact it's true. So there is the prospect that Tesla is going to have more competition. And then, of course, there is the rule that once you sell 200,000 vehicles, you're no longer eligible for some of those subsidies on which Tesla has been relying. So there are a number of things that are stacking up against Tesla right now, and this is a substantial pullback. It is a clear downward dynamic. It suggests that at a minimum we are in a process of mean reversion, and that mean, despite the fact that we are already down almost $70, that it has still got almost $50 to go. So this is a really quite a volatile environment. When we look at the rest of the global indices, we haven't had nearly the same volatility. Generally speaking, it was a positive day for the majority of markets, although it was a bit mixed in Europe. The other clear outperformer today was China. The A-share index was up in a dynamic manner, and that is continuing to bounce from the lower side of its range. And when I think we do need to look at the weekly chart for some context, because it has been really quite an inert environment. This has been a largely engineered higher to lateral ranging environment, and despite the fact that we have now got a lower high from the beginning of this year and we're pushing back up towards that area right now, it really would be a sustained move below 3,000 would be required to question that this isn't just going to be a rather inert environment with just ranging from the upper to the lower side, a couple of hundred points either side of that. Despite the fact that the North Koreans have in fact got intercontinental ballistic missiles, the Korean index was in positive territory today. It is one of an increasingly large number of Asian markets that have completed pretty lengthy ranges, and it continues to improve upon that performance. That would suggest that there is, despite the fact that there is an increasing geopolitical premium, there is no evidence that it is being priced into some of these neighboring markets around North Korea. And that would suggest that investors are not willing to give credence to the possibility. It would suggest that if there is in fact a military strike against North Korea, that it is going to come as a surprise to the vast majority of investors. And in that regard, it represents something of a black swan, that because there's nobody pricing it in. Of course, the very fact that we're talking about it means that it doesn't quite qualify in the book definition of what a black swan is, because that would be something that comes completely out of the blue. But certainly, there doesn't appear to be any pricing in of that eventuality. In the oil market today, Russia said that it hasn't got any appetite for cutting additional supply. So Brent crude was down almost $2, and West Texas Intermediate was down in excess of $2. Something that I was waiting for an upward dynamic, personally at least, to buy oil, but there wasn't one. And I wasn't willing to buy following such meager advances. Then we have this downward dynamic today. And if we look back in May and we look back in April, we even go back to January, its pullbacks from major peaks have been, and they have these big pullbacks, these dynamic pullbacks from these lower highs have confirmed the return of supply dominance. We have not had the clear upward dynamic from the $45 area, suggesting that this was short covering and that the supply-dominated environment remains in place. When we think about what is happening with oil, there are some rather large questions. The first is that prices have been unable to sustain a move above $60 since the beginning of 2015. That's 2.5 years ago. And we have seen that prices have bounced from above $40 on a number of occasions, and that it required a sustained move below $30. Back, it wasn't sustained for very long, but it did hold below $30 for a few weeks to really start to panic suppliers into cutting back on how much they're providing to the global market. So we know that a great deal of additional supply becomes economic above 55, and that above 60, that unconventional suppliers are drilling and drilling with abandon. So there is a great deal of supply comes online from unconventional supply and from offshore, because prices have come down substantially in terms of the marginal cost of production offshore above $60. The big question is, what is the panic button? At what point do prices fall to before we have suppliers beginning to lock in some of that supply and drilling projects being abandoned? So far, we haven't seen it. We're at $47 right now, and we have not yet seen a lock-in, an additional lock-in of supply. So that would suggest that we're still in this ranging environment and that the bias is still downwards. The big question is, how low are oil prices going to go? And considering that the move from 27 to 60, well, it wasn't quite 60, it was more like 58, was 100%, then this is a really quite a volatile range where you have trough to peak swings of 100% and peak to trough of 50%. That's a substantially volatile range, but it does then mean that selling the rallies, buying the dips, is likely to be the only way to profit from it. It's going to be a trader's environment, not a really an investor's environment. Something that I was looking at today was were shares like Royal Dutch Shell and Chevron. They have both now begun to trade below their respective trend means. They were not able to hold the advances that they put in earlier this week, and they're testing their respective lows. Now, this is a loss of consistency. That was really quite an impressive but also consistent advance from the beginning of 2016 all the way through until the end of 2016. We have subsequently had a larger pullback or trading below the trend mean, and volatility has picked up. So these are inconsistencies, and if it were to break below the lows that we had back in towards the end of April, the beginning of May, well, then we would have broken the progression of higher major reaction lows, and it would constitute a complete top formation. What we really have in the automotive parts sector are wonderful teaching examples of completed Type 3 top formations. O'Reilly Automotive had one of the most impressive uptrends of any share from its lows, in fact, in 2008, and it got all the way up to $275. And then we had a substantial pullback. And that was a loss of consistency at the penultimate high. We subsequently were able to get up to another new high, but it wasn't sustained. And the fact that you had this very clear upward dynamic and then it just failed, came back down to test the lower side of the underlying range, failed to surmount its high, and then started rolling over and broke down. So we had the massive reaction against the prevailing trend. It gave way to this Type 3 ranging time and size formation, and now we are accelerating lower. Prices are really quite oversold at this stage, but it is a completed top formation. This is a very large question that people are perhaps getting a little bit very, well, they're getting very bearish about the auto parts sector. We have very similar patterns for AutoZone and for auto parts. And the PE ratio is, the estimated PE is still around 15, so it's not bargain basement prices. But the reality is that the internal combustion engine is not going to disappear overnight, and that people will still need to get parts. They will still need to service their cars. So that would suggest that there is a lot of bad news that has been priced in, that the time to be short was about 3 months ago when it was just breaking down, and now that it is accelerating lower, that a lot of that bad news has been priced in. It would really require a clear upward dynamic, something that stands out on the daily chart to confirm that short covering is coming in. But in the meantime, we would still have to give the benefit of the doubt to the downside, but also bearing in mind that O'Reilly Automotive is unlikely to go bust, and that the lower it goes, the better value it becomes as the new reality of the market is being priced in. What I find really quite interesting is something like Genuine Parts. It is about 50% dominated by automotive parts. That also trended really impressively and consistently higher until the beginning of 2015, and then gave way to this very volatile environment. And it is now falling, and it has demonstrated a downward bias for much of the last year, and it has not yet broken down, but this is a substantial loss of momentum. We did have that very brief acceleration for 6 consecutive weeks at the end of 2014, and that really was the end. This represents another potentially developing Type 3 top formation, and I suspect that if we get an additional downward move in and a further extension of the downtrends that we've seen in some of those other auto parts, that Genuine Parts is unlikely to be completely immune from that. When we look at the bond markets, then I think the interesting part of the curve is at the short end. 2-year yields have broken out to new recovery highs. It would suggest that, and if we were to simply take the labels off the chart and address the yield from very simple behavioral crowd perspective, then there is a clear rounding characteristic evident since really the beginning of 2012. We had a first step above the base, we sustained the move above 1%, which is a big psychological level, and now we have an upward bias and it is breaking out to new high ground. That this continues to represent what looks like the beginning of a new bull market. It's at 1.4%. That's not really pricing in an awful lot of additional upside for the federal funds rate, but it is suggesting that bond investors are willing to begin to consider that the Fed funds rate is going to be going up in future. And that is also being reflected, at least partially, at the longer end of the curve. The 10-year yield is up over the last 5 consecutive days. It was in mildly negative territory today. It is testing this 2.4% level. That represents the progression of lower rally highs since the beginning of March. If it can sustain a move above it, well, then we'll have an argument to confirm that we're back in a supply-dominated environment from the perspective of the 10-year bond yield. In the meantime, it does need to get above it, and the fact that the yield was up for 5 consecutive days suggests that we may get some consolidation around these areas. When we think about where we are, this is still, I think, an increasingly volatile environment. That the most likely scenario is still that we get some pause and consolidation in some of these stock markets, that there is a substantial rotation going on out of things that were really high momentum moves or that are being affected by secular trends. And one of the things that is affecting, for example, the auto parts sector is that they're getting more competition from Amazon. Isn't everything in the retail sector? It's just that everything that anyone wants to buy on a day-to-day basis is now facing competition from companies like Amazon. So Amazon is also worth watching. And it has been consolidating below this psychological 1,000 level for a month already. And so far, that has been a pretty shallow pullback, but it is at least partially unwinding that overbought condition relative to the trend mean. The trend mean is trending higher really quite rapidly. So by virtue of the fact of just going sideways, it is unwinding a lot of that overbought condition. So I do think that the most likely scenario is that we've got a rotation going on, that it is the banks that are doing better, and that they're benefiting from this return to synchronized global economic expansion. It is the mining sector that is doing better because they are also benefiting from the same reasons. The FTSE 350 mining index was in mildly positive territory in here today, but it is bouncing from the region of the trend mean. And the Nasdaq Biotech Index, which has, I think, it got a valuation benefit relative to the wider Nasdaq, and just because it went sideways for so long, that was also in positive territory in here today as well. So I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.